This is a totally different podcast episode than I usually do, because here I'm showcasing the amazing people who will be at a Fluence Locked conference, the first conference for freelancers that made with love, and it'll take place in Berlin on May 15, 16, 2024. If you are a freelancer in Europe, it's an event made for you to learn, exchange experiences, and build your network of great freelancers and experts who move the freelance economy forward. So go to freelanceunlocked.com and grab your ticket right away. My name is Yuri. I'm a community builder at Code Control and 9am.work. And my guest is Glenn Hodgson, founder and CEO of Freelance Movement, Think Tank Consultancy and Trade Association founder, policy expert, author, and coach with 20 plus years of working professional experience. So, hello, Glenn.
Hi there, Yuri. Great to be on the show and really happy to be involved in the Berlin event, which we're doing together in just a matter of weeks now. So really enjoying that.
Super, super. It's just a few weeks, as you said, and I'm super happy to meet you before the event itself, to get to know you better, to connect with you, to hear some nuggets of wisdom from you even before the conference. And tell me, please, how did you start your journey in the freelance world?
It's a great question, and like all the best things in life, Yuri, it happens a little bit by mistake and a little bit by planning. I've worked for a long time on regulation policy issues, both within the European institutions, but also with companies, governments, organizations on the other side of the fence, trade associations, consultancies, and general advisory forums. And I was working, looking after Nordics, Baltics, and Central and Eastern Europe for an agency. And through this, kind of the red thread here had been the fact that labor market policy, digitalization, digital policy had always been very strong in terms of my interests, but also the areas that I was working on. After a time of starting my own think tank, was speaking to a lot of founders, CEOs, but also freelancers, because at the end of the day, Yuri, I class myself as a freelancer, open talent, and part of this new revolution as well. So it's not just talking about it, it's living and breathing it every day as well, which I think is really important. And I found a really large group of individuals who were making money and earning their living in a slightly different way. And by that, I mean outside the traditional 9-to-5, selling hours, 9-to-5, 5 days to week to just one employer, but actually having more of a portfolio career, doing projects, working with different companies and organizations, and actually delivering value to them in a completely different way. And, you know, it was on the back of that I just got into this world that there was a whole range of people from projects, leaders, consultants, all the way through to digital nomads who had a laptop, an internet connection, and a PowerPoint, and were able to sort of work from anywhere. And this got me sort of really interested in the scene, learning off other people how this was working. But also a lot of companies, organizations, and freelancers said to me, well, Glenn, no one really understands what we do. We're kind of ignored. No one understands the way the labor market is going. And then what happened? COVID hit. And of course, everyone was forced to rely on digital tools, physical meetings. Going to the office was banned in the majority of places. So it was kind of adapting to the new normal. But people like me and a lot of our organizations that I work with were already living this lifestyle. We were sort of used to it and we're already on board with it from the beginning. So on the back of that, a lot of individuals said, well, Glenn, can't you actually start some kind of organization movement that puts our views across? Because no one listens to us. We're too small by ourselves. Yeah. Can you create a group that puts us in the limelight? And that was basically the starting point. And that was kind of ever since then, we've been sort of building and growing. Now we're the biggest freelance future of work group in Europe. And growing all the time in terms of platforms, but also freelancers who are involved from a whole host of sectors. And I think the depth and breadth of this, Yuri, is the real interesting element and something that decision makers, opinion formers sometimes miss. You know, at one end, we've got ride hailing and food delivery, which people see, it's very visible. But we also miss the healthcare professionals, the IT programmers, also the artists and musicians who are also freelancers, and everything in between. And even, you know, the European Union, who are in their figures and usually quite conservative, we're talking about by next year, 45 million people who will be freelancing either full time or have side gigs, side hustles. So this is no longer something that's kind of left field, a little bit niche. It's something that's here and now, and it's just growing bigger and bigger all the time.
I feel like COVID was a great ignite for that, because exactly, you know, when people stopped going to offices, they were working from home, and then like, oh, by the way, I already finished my tasks. Maybe I can do another side gig. Maybe I can help somebody else. Maybe I can do some for myself. And I talked to many freelancers who started their own projects during the COVID. So yes, it's interesting. It was like, you know, like the pandemic, but still it was a catalyzer of such a growth. And I really love your accidental, still intentional journey into freelancing. And I'm curious, what is your take on the freelance economy and how will it develop in the near future? You already told that it will be growing like 45 million and even more, but like, what do you think, what can you add to that?
Yeah, well, I think it's, you know, as they always say, never waste a good crisis. And I think this has been something that's happened there. And I think it's a lot of these trends were already underway anyway, Yuri, but it's kind of got the rocket fuel happened because of COVID, but also the increased availability of high-speed internet connections, and also the increasing number of tools. And this was something that was happening already that makes things much easier. And then, of course, what happened last year, we had sort of the broad scale availability of generative AI products. And now we see this for either it's writing, producing video, producing sound, producing all kinds of content. Is becoming simpler. It's becoming easier for people who don't have sort of a background in this or sort of programming knowledge. It's becoming easier and quicker all the time. And I think this is also on a kind of week by week basis, we're seeing sort of new availabilities out there. So the ability for freelancers to produce things, to have a service, and to be able to scale has never been easier. And I think we're just at the start of something really, really big. And I think that there'll be, you know, I say this a lot, the fact that it's not for everyone. Some people love the fact that they can do a job 9 to 5, and then they can forget about it. They can leave it and do something else. And that's absolutely fine. It's not saying this is for everyone, but there is an increasing number of people who want to maybe have the sliding scale of maybe having sort of a job, and also on the side they may be interested in content production, or they want to do music or whatever it is, and they, after a time, they realize that they can actually make money from their passion. So normally the way it works is that people don't just go straight into it 150%. They test it a little bit and new ideas, they find communities of people. And I think within the sort of the future of work, it's the opposite of the 9 to 5, whereas 9 to 5, it's elbows out, people are aggressive and they're looking over their own territories, traditional office life. But in the kind of the more freelance world, it's much more open source. People are willing to share good practice, best ideas through their own communities, whether it's personal, face-to-face networks or online. And there's so much information and best practice out there. It's quite fantastic. And I think that, you know, your podcast as well is something that shares this. And I think there's more and more routes that if you want to test the waters, you can actually do that. And I think the first step is always the hardest, but it's like everything. Just get in, get going, and then sort of pivot and change as you go along. And I think that the, you know, freelancing is no longer this thing that's seen as the, you know, the gig economy, that's something that's negative and it's a little bit substandard. It's going to be the normal very, very quickly for an increasing number of people. And I think increasingly the younger generation, people who are kind of that university age, mid-20s now. But also at the same time, it's interesting that we're seeing this growth of people who are maybe retired later in their careers, who are also adding different things. They want to do different things, maybe a sort of advisory role. They don't want to do it sort of 40 hours a week, but they've still got something to give and they can add value. So I think we're seeing the opportunities for all age groups, whether it's men, women, different backgrounds, but also from different locations in terms of the geography as well. And I think this is something that's really interesting. The availability of having a project economy work where you are, but also the international element that you don't have to move to a Berlin, a Paris, or a London or the big cities. You can actually be in the countryside or somewhere more remote and still earning money, still adding value to companies and organizations. And I think this is a real sea change in terms of where we are in terms of the world of work.
I talk to many, many freelancers and many of them telling me that, hey, I'm a lonely wolf. I'm doing everything by myself. But you mentioned communities a few times already. So what do you think is the role of community in the future of work?
I think it's essential. I think it's the sounding board. It's the context in which you work, but also it's the provision of good ideas. Whether you're an extrovert who wants to go out there and create things, or more of an introvert, you can actually sort of see what's happening. You can take the temperature of what's going on. So it can be everything from the fact that, okay, I want to produce my content in this kind of way. What is the tool I should be using for video at the moment? I want to translate my work into German. And now there's tools that allow you to do that for sort of a quite modest monthly subscription. There's all these kind of things. And also what's the look and feel is helpful. Also how to use AI as well. What are the prompts that you should be using? How can you become more efficient in working? But also I think the hints and tips from a community, the things that we forget. I mean, it's great to be able to make money out of your passion, but at the end of the day, you need to also do this, the kind of what we call traditionally the boring stuff in the back. You need to run a business. You need to pay your taxes. You need to pay yourself. You need to make sure that you're getting an inflow of revenue from one or several clients. You need to market yourself. You need to sort of stay on top of the administration as well as the more fun stuff. So I think it's sort of this idea of sort of how to be able to do this in a smart way as well. Things you need to think of, whether you're going to go the full route, where's the best place for nomad visas? Do you need one? How to set yourself up? And what are the things you should be thinking of in terms of organizing yourself, finding clients, organizing your day, but also keeping that balance? Because I think a lot of us as freelancers, the problem we have is we work all the time. And that's great, but you also need to, even though you're always on, you need to be able to focus on other things and get that division from time to time as well. So I think it's hints and tips from people who are already doing it is absolutely crucial. And I think this community element of learning, living, and sharing best practice, and sharing a best practice which is always evolving because new things are happening, I think is absolutely essential.
Now we have this another podcast called Freelance Sucks, where I talk to freelancers about their challenges. And they always say, like, except for work, definitely work itself. Like, what is the most time consuming thing? It's admin work, it's sales, it's marketing and building your own brand. And then like, how do I do that? And I'm like, go meet people, go ask them. They've already done that. You know, they know how to do this and you're not alone. People are like, no, I'm alone. And you're not alone. Go ask people. That's exactly what community are for. And yeah, I totally agree with you. And give me a sneak peek into what you'll be talking about on the Freelance Unlocked stage.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm really looking forward to this event. It's gonna be a fantastic 2 days. And you know what, Yuri, I'm looking forward to learning myself as well. I think we talk about community before, but yeah. I think that sharing best practice and some of the things that are happening is important, but also being in the community and learning from a variety of elements is good. But from my perspective, I'll be talking about the legislative side of things. I'll be talking about the new European Union Platform Work Directive, which will has been agreed but will be formally adopted probably in September. Then countries in Europe will have 2 years to implement this into their national law. So I'll talk a little bit about what's the context for this, what is it including in the legislation, and what it will mean for freelancers as well, both in terms of the legislative elements and how it will affect their daily lives, and also what the impact potentially could be in the national setting. How could this be transferred into a law? But so within that, I will give sort of some of the scenarios that will come out of that, and also give a few ideas as well for the hints and tips for freelancers themselves based on the new legislation, how to basically work their way through the maze and benefit from it as opposed to be caught out by the new laws.
What does directive means in like easy language for freelancers mostly?
Yeah, well, the big thing is that the presumption of employment. We had a worrying time for a while there where basically everyone would be forced to be seen as an employee. And of course, that's why we were very involved in the petition and actually sort of sharing this with European Parliament, European Commission, and also national decision makers that, look, this is the voice of freelancers. There's a whole percentage of the population who don't want to have a 9-to-5 job. Some people do, yep, and that's fine. But please allow the flexibility for those who want to have a different work style to be able to have the freedom to choose when, where, and how they earn money. So don't push people into a kind of a 1950s view of what a job is. Allow them have the flexibility. That's absolutely crucial. And what we want to make sure is that at the national level, we maintain that. So there's no presumption of employment that's put in there. That's crucial. And also within the definitions of what is the platform economy, what is a freelance worker, to basically get that very sort of specific at the national level, that it includes people like that. And if there are people who are need protecting, who feel threatened, who want to be employed, absolutely allow them the opportunity to be an employee. We don't want to hinder that, but allow the people who are entrepreneurs, who are independent contractors, allow them to have that. And also there's an element I think is important in there with algorithmic management. So we all know about the algorithms that decide things for us and make things easier, more efficient. And that's great. We want to be able to have the ability for these tools to facilitate us. We don't want to have this human oversight the whole time, that even the smallest process has to be sort of double checked. We have to give our consent to every single thing. We just want it to follow the GDPR personal data rules. We want our data to be protected. We don't want to be sort of abused in any kind of way, but also we want the efficiencies of technology to be harnessed and utilized in terms of our career.
Is it also because legislation creators want platforms to pay more taxes?
I think that there's an element here of maybe sort of payment of taxes, and we actually do now have European rules that have come through on what's called the DAC 7, which came out last year, which means that in a European context, the platforms actually have to be registered for VAT, but also paying the taxes from the freelance talent as well. And I think this is a positive move. I mean, we don't want anything whereby people are outside the system. And also, you know, people need to pay taxes. We all need to do that. But also, it should be the same time that individuals or freelancers, because we choose this lifestyle, we shouldn't lose out in terms of the rights to social security, to healthcare, to the national insurance schemes that are available in the different countries. So we want to be sort of on the same level as a traditional worker. We don't want to be sort of seen as second-class citizens or losing out with any of the rights or benefits.
What are your personal think about this directive and its impact on freelancers and platforms?
I think in the current format, it's basically taken the heart out of it. There's very little left in terms of coordination. It would have been ideal to have a single set of rules for the whole of Europe in terms of how we as freelancers can actually be protected and looked after. Now it's very much all left up to the national level. So I think that's a missed opportunity. But at the same time, it could have been a lot worse if we were forced to be employees with very strict rules and responsibilities placed on us by so-called employers. That would have mean things would have been very tough. And you know, we see the example from Spain about how this has worked, where they've actually to put this forward that everyone needs to be employed. What's happened is the money that freelancers are earning has gone down, the opportunities are less, but also corruption and misuse of the system has actually increased by forcing people down that route. You have someone who gets a license and says, look, I'm a freelancer, and then they sell it to sort of 5, 6, 7 other individuals who are doing it illegally. So the black economy just increases as opposed to being stamped out.
So crazy. Why do they do that? I have no idea. Like, I mean, not in the black market. I totally understand that people need to thrive. The people want to still do what they want to do without being regulated to the ground. But like, yeah, there are so many regulations going on. But what are the positive sides for freelancers in this directive?
I think the positive thing is that they're actually realized that there is a platform economy, that the freelance economy is something that is there and is growing. I like the element that it's there to facilitate entrepreneurship and innovation and allow people to have different ways of working. I think this is very, very strong indeed. And at the end of the day, it's allowing freelancers and open talent to be able to exist and be able to flourish and be able to follow their path that they've chosen, as opposed to the rules of some bureaucrat or the big employers' federations or the trade unions, who have an interest in forcing people into full-time employment. Then they can get membership and they can get fees. The issue is that a lot of independent talent maybe joins communities, but it doesn't join big associations. It doesn't join trade unions. And therefore, they see their membership base reducing because of this. And therefore, you know, some of the more evolved trade unions realize they need to adapt and actually get on with this new wave and be able to harness it, whereas some of the more old-fashioned players, they just want to deny it and try and prevent it. I think we've come too far now. It's not going to be stopped. It's just how quickly they come round to the realization that there is a change underway, and they need to change their approach to be able to make the most of it.
Try to understand myself. So what is the difference for a freelancer between trade union and freelancing platform?
So for them, it's basically the way in which they've got matching services. So the platform can be a matching service that can basically just be there, that I can go on there. I've got a specific skill or time or expertise that I want to be able to give to a buyer of those services. So it allows us to be matched up, whether I'm a computer programmer, whether I want to work with my car and drive people around, or I want to deliver food on a Saturday evening because I'm free and I think that will be a good time for me to make some money. So that's kind of the platform side there, the facilitation role that they have there. And from the freelancer side, I see it much more as independent talent. This can be someone who has a full-time job, wants to earn more money. It could be a student who just wants to be able to fill in a few hours. It could be a retired person who wants to make money from the knowledge that they have. I think there's a whole range of skills and services that are out there. And I think that one works well with the other. But also there's a lot of freelancers who just work within their own personal communities as well. They create their own networks, whether it's companies or organizations, individuals who need help. And I think that's something that's increasing as well, not going via traditional platforms, but creating your own networks of like-minded individuals, but also companies who are now going out there and thinking, well, we don't want to hire someone for this role. What we want is someone to actually deliver this value on this project for a shorter time, be it a week, a month, or even sort of a year in some cases. But it's the fact that this more open, flexible approach that I think is increasing.
Got it. And talking about freelancers' rights and data, personal data. So which freelancers' rights that freelancers do not usually know about are violated the most by platforms?
I think that the platforms themselves, I think, are generally pretty good. They don't store data on individuals. All they do is they sort of link you to sort of the service. But when you're off that, there's no way that you can, your data or you as an individual can be searched. It's very much for the matching facilitation, which I think is good. And the majority of platforms do that, and they ask for the consent. And particularly the European platforms, they all subscribe to the legislation, both in terms of the data protection GDPR rules, which I think is absolutely crucial. So you as an individual, you actually own your own data, and I think this is something that's very refreshing and new, and something that we should have more broadly, that I can choose what I want to do with my data. If you want to share it with someone else, then you have to pay me for that, or I have to give my consent. I can market it and monetize it, but I'm the one I want to be able to sort of decide that, not you as a big platform. And I think that's a crucial change and something that we need to sort of keep on board. I think the same thing for when we look at sort of AI and the AI Act as well. If there's something that's dangerous or criminal within there, yes, we need to have oversight of that. But we don't want to have every last process analyzed and stored and being made available. I think it's just not necessary, and it's really something that's not proportionate to any of the risks and the needs that are there.
Am I hearing it correctly that, for example, if a freelancer given their name, surname, email, and phone, and platform use it to share this information with potential clients with definitely consent of a freelancer, it's okay. But if the platform tracks every movement, every click, every step that person does on the platform and maybe even outside of it, it's not okay.
Well, that's not okay. I mean, if the individual hasn't given their consent to it, absolutely not. And to be tracking an individual kind of in the background, this kind of TikTok approach, what as I call it, where basically everything is monitored and fed into the system, that's not something that's okay. It's not something in the European context how we can operate, and it's certainly not good, and it will basically reduce the trust that exists between platforms and individuals if you're kind of subtly in secret tracking a whole host of information which is unnecessary.
But what to do with systems like Google? They always give all the information they track in the huge, huge, huge documents that you have to read, and nobody really reads them. Okay, I know a few people who read them, but in general, nobody really reads them. But you can't use it if you do not consent with it. So how to overcome this problem that you just can't get access to some really nice feature that can help you to thrive as a freelancer if you are not agreeing with it? Even though if you might not want to agree with it.
Yeah, I think this is really there's no perfect solutions. There's just opportunity costs and trade-offs. And I think that, it depends how much you need the things. I mean, if it's for me, for example, there's certain tools and certain elements that I do utilize on a daily basis. Some of the subscription models, there's less sharing. Some of the more open things, I don't believe in the concept of free. I think nothing's free. If it seems like you don't pay anything up front, you'll be paying with your data or something otherwise. So I think, it's to be aware of the fact if you're getting benefit out of it, yes, but there's also a cost that you're paying at the same time. It's definitely not a free lunch.
And talking about this directive, so what is one thing that freelancers and platforms have to keep in mind not to have this employment status applied?
Well, this is, again, it's up to the national level now. And I think what would be important would be at the national level to say that, if me, Glenn Hodgson, as a freelancer, wants to be a freelancer, I'm allowed to state that I am. So I'm not forced down anything. No one's deciding for me. No rules or regulations will be brought up in that element. So I think that's important. I also think it'd be really good to have criteria. So if you have, say, seven criteria that are very clear that everyone can see, say, for example, if you're being classed as an independent contractor, but you meet six of these seven criteria for employment, then you are probably an employee. It's just a way of you being misclassified so that employment contributions aren't paid, or it's not done in the right way. So I think that, you know, this list of criteria would be a very good way of doing it, so that officials at the national level could decide that, hang on, we've got these that they seem neutral, they seem very fair. And if you're calling someone an independent contractor when they're really fulfilling the role of an employee, then you should be employing them and doing that in the right way.
And I think that to those rules to be implied really well, I feel like every country has to have a huge community of real freelancers and to listen to them to understand yes. what rules to create, because otherwise, you know, they have no idea how freelancers works. They know just only yeah. how employment works, and like they get these criteria out of the blue. So
absolutely. And Yuri, this is one thing that I'll use this platform as well to say that we're there. We had our petition. We've collected a lot of thoughts, ideas, and viewpoints from freelancers. Get us involved. We've actually took a number of freelancers to Brussels to meet with politicians who were looking at these topics. And I think we're going to continue doing that as well. So please, 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 any regulators, decision makers out there, listen to the freelancers. We're collecting a lot of sort of views at the moment. We're coming out with a study based on the feedback from the surveys and the petition that we carried out. So please listen to this. Don't just talk to the usual stakeholders, be it the companies, the employers' federations, and the trade unions. Speak to the freelancers who are actually doing this, who are living and breathing it every single day, and you'll come up with better policy.
Totally, totally, totally agree with you. And Glenn, you will definitely be at the Freelance Unlocked conference. You'll be a speaker there. And yes. what would you say to your friend if they asked you whether they should go to the Freelance Unlocked?
Come along. Doesn't matter if you're a government official, you need to learn something, you need to understand how freelancers are thinking, because it's not the future. It's here and now, and it's just only going to grow exponentially into the future. Also, for other companies, I think you need to understand what's actually happening in terms of freelance talent. You need to get there because you need to have a freelancer strategy. The traditional way of doing things is not going to cut it anymore. And two, in the war for talent, you need to be able to get the best people. And a lot of people now are moving down a project route. So you need to have a freelancer open strategy so that you can actually have a blend of full-time employees, contractors, consultants, freelancers, and get that right blend in place. But also I'd say to my friends who are freelancers, get there, share ideas, learn from best practice, but also just talk to people and really engage with other individuals. It's amazing how when you go to these things, you find partnerships, you find work opportunities out of people who are sort of down a similar path. Maybe they have complementary skills, knowledge, and expertise to you. I think it's a fantastic opportunity. It's the first in Germany, and hopefully the first of many, because this is such an untapped area and so much opportunity there. I think there's something for everyone in this event.
What is the best way to connect with you even before the conference?
Get me on LinkedIn, Twitter, or via the website. You can get me on email. I respond to everything. I'm very, very open. Ask me things, say that you agree, maybe say you would disagree with some things. That's also fine as well. We've got sort of a plurality of views. But I think that, you know, just follow some of the things that we're doing in this space. There's a lot happening at the moment. We're putting together, you know, this is part of the roadshow on the platform work. And just share knowledge, ideas that are coming up. And, you know, very happy to sort of link individuals into our community as well and be able to share best practice.
Ben, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom even before the conference. And I can't wait to learn even more from you on Freelance Unlocked, and hope to see you very soon in person.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it, Yuri. Thank you for today.
And for those who listened to this episode, I hope you learn from Glenn's experience and say thank you to him in person at the Freelance Unlocked conference on May 15-16 in Berlin. So go to freelanceunlocked.com, grab your ticket, and meet you there.